The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Booker Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Show.
All right, folks, welcome to The Muskie 360 Podcast. I've got Joe Booker on the line. How you doing, bud?
Hey. I'm doing fine. But whenever we're talking muskies, I'm pretty excited.
Absolutely. So we got you on because you've got the new article up.
Yes.
Which is It Only Takes One Cast, which pretty much just sums up muskie fishing, I think.
Well, you know, it's one of those sports where you go from zero to hero literally in a minute, in a second, in one cast. Your season changes. You're having a bad day. You're having a bad week. You're having a bad month. You're having a bad year. And yet all of a sudden everything turns around because it only takes that one moment for everything to go right. Correct?
Absolutely. I mean, that I tell people on the boat all the time that I go from zero to hero every day. You know,
yeah.
You've got 6 hours on the water. You're sitting here grinding your brains out, and they're looking at you like, are we going to catch anything? And then you're a superstar. And
yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. That's right. And everybody listening today, trust me when I tell you this, that the fish out there does not take a resume.
I like that.
Well, you think about it. Now, that's an old Joe Booker guideline.
I love it.
That was one of my old guy, you know, sidelines. It's like, you know, guys are going, man, you know, we, a guy always picked the wrong day. You know, it's a,
right.
am I using the right bait? And I used to say, you know, you got to understand, I never caught a big one. So, you know, do I have to, you know, climb the ladder? No. Because, you know, I always connect the dots with deer hunting a lot. I always tell people, you know, that deer, when you climb up on a tree stand, that deer doesn't walk by and go, oh, gee, I can't walk by that guy's stand because he's never shot one before. You know,
he doesn't have an 8-point, so I can't put myself out there. He isn't.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with muskie fishing, folks. When you're out there, you know, always try to be doing the best job you can on every single cast, but you never know which one it's going to be. And you never know which cast is going to be the cast of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cast, I mean, Steve, look at your big, the big one you caught last summer. That was totally unpredictable.
Oh, are you talking about the big gliderator fish?
The big, your big shallow rater fish that you caught, that giant.
Oh, God. Yeah.
right out of nowhere. I mean, you look back on that and you go, all those hours you've done, all these things right, and gone to all these spots.
That story.
You know?
Do you want me to, let me tell that real quick, because I think it's hilarious. So, I'm not going to say the specs on that fish, because me and Joe know and a few other people know, but biggest fish I've ever caught, period.
Right. It's a giant.
I had clients on the boat in the morning, and we had an all-day trip plan, and we were out, and the guy was sort of getting a little scruffy, if you will. He was getting a little frustrated, and there was a lunar coming in the afternoon. He looks at me, and he says, well, I'm ready to go get lunch. And I said, well, you know, I would really fish this peak. We should be on top of this. And he goes, well, I'm uninterested. If we haven't seen anything thus far, we're not going to see anything now. And I said, okay, I'll take you into the dock. He goes in, he runs and gets some McDonald's. I run out and hit one spot, put on a shallow rater, throw it out, make two cranks, and biggest fish I've ever seen. I didn't even have a leader on. I was playing with baits, and it tied that directly on. I had a guy break a line earlier. I was just playing around, threw that thing out right on that spot, and the biggest muskie I've ever caught. Here I'm standing in the boat by myself, paying. The last thing I thought about was catching a fish, to be honest with you.
And your clients at McDonald's.
And my clients at McDonald's shoving a McDouble down his face.
Yeah, you know, isn't that interesting? You know, it's we could tell stories like that all day, and folks, that's the way it happens a lot of times.
Yeah.
It rarely happens when you predict it. However, that's why you must do lots of things right all the time.
Yeah.
And that includes putting a leader on your rod.
Yeah, that was a big no-no.
But it's funny, right before we went on the air here, I was telling you the story. Mm-hmm. Only takes one cast. I remember fishing with Rich Belanger from St. Croix a few years ago, and we hadn't put a fish in the boat in 3 days. We had one of those awful weather fronts come through. Mm-hmm. In it was like the first major late August cold front. It's just like
right.
with these
down.
Squalls, yeah, dropping, plummeting water, not dropping, plummeting water temperatures and all kinds of negative things that just kind of shut the system down. And, we're 3 days into this and, I'm as cranky as can be, which is very rare, by the way.
Oh yeah, very,
yeah, you've seen it. I'm bummed, but the boat in general, everybody's like in a what the heck mood. Mm-hmm. are we gonna score another fish the rest of the week? And I guess my brain was thinking at that point, we've been throwing all these cast and retrieve. I call them chase baits, like topwater lures and blades, cast and retrieve big blades and stuff. And I thought, we're not getting any follows. These fish are laying tight to where any fish that's at all possibly catchable is laying tight to something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way my brain was thinking, and I'm setting this all up for this scenario. So if you want to see this, folks, it's on one of my YouTube videos. It's called The Birthday Beast. It's the Birthday Beast 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the story of a muskie.
I'll add a link on the podcast.
Great. Well, it's a fish we end up nicknaming Double Dorsal. It's one of the longest muskies I've ever caught. And it had two dorsal fins. And that's how long it was. Almost like a taxidermist said, I'd fudged the job. Anyways, I've been throwing all of these big blades, small blades, cast, topwater lures, mm-hmm. Jerk baits and stuff. And no movement. It's third day. And I go, I got a clunk bottom.
Right.
I've got to get all crankbaits and clunk bottom. I pulled the big shallow rater out. You can see it on the video. You can see me snap the lure on. It only takes one cast.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. This is snap the lure on, just like you did with this big muskie you caught last summer. Snap the lure on, make the cast, grind it down till I feel it clunk the rocks. I clunk, let it rise, clunk again, and the line goes slack. And my instinct was just to pull up on the rod, and I catch the longest muskie of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it. That fish is incredible.
Yeah, literally first cast. Yeah, literally first cast. And then, folks, after the hoopla, the posing with the fish and everything, and I put it back. By the way, that fish is the fish that tore my shoulder up. Because when I lifted it out for photos, and a quick closing pose for the TV show, it shook really violently. I didn't want to let it go and, let it fall in the bottom of the boat.
Right.
Or, have one of those, what we call a drop squatch. My old buddy, Mike Novak.
Did he say drop squatch?
Right. Yeah. We had a nickname for my old buddy, Mike Novak. We called him Sasquatch. Because, that old Sasquatch video. Fuzzy gorilla guy in the gorilla suit walking in the distance.
Right.
Well, my buddy Mike Novak walked exactly like that. So we nicknamed him Sasquatch, and he picked the biggest muskie he'd ever caught with me. He wanted to pick it out of the net like I do, because I used to pick the fish up for him.
Uh-huh.
And so he's picking it up out of the net, and it does a shake, and he leaves it go, and it falls in the water and swims away. And the look on his face was like priceless. It's one of my old. I gotta get some of those really old videos. You've encouraged me to do this too. Those up on YouTube. Well, this is early '90s, and this is a 55-inch fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the look on his face is like, you gotta be kidding me. And I used to show this video at sports shows when I was speaking right before. For people to guess how big it was. So we nicknamed that episode Drop Squatch, because everybody knew, our inner circle knew that Mike Novak's nickname was Sasquatch.
Right.
So getting back to Double Dorsal, I did not want to do a drop squatch. I wanted to hold on to a fish. Well, I probably should have done the drop squatch and let the fish just fall into the lake. Because I held on to it, you know, it went mm-hmm. back and forth. And, you know, I'm trying to somewhat, you know, stop the violent shaking, and it tore my shoulder all to pieces. And actually, it's never been the same. And that spawned a brand new series of rods for St. Croix, you know, the downsizing. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things happen. But, you know, to wrap that story up, that was where I'm going with this is the next spot, I catch another 50.
Oh, crap.
So, you know, those fish went from nothing for 3 days, you know, going into mm-hmm. the third, the fourth day to bam, bam, you know, 250s.
Right.
50 pluses. And then we catch a couple other fish. And then going into the evening, Rich Belanger catches his big fish. And we have one of the greatest days on the water we've ever had. And Rich caught one of his biggest muskies ever on that same day.
Wow. And just goes to show, just keep putting in the work.
Yes. You know,
keep putting in the work.
Yes, just keep putting in the work.
I think more than anything, like with that latest article and talking about that philosophy, is just for people to realize that don't overthink it. Just keep going.
And that's a good point. Overthinking is a problem in muskie fishing today. Yes. You're right.
And it's like what you and I are talking, and it's just we're just talking about things. You always say run the play, and that's what we talk about all the time. And we're just going, you know, what do you do? Run the play.
Yes, you know, it's you know, all the coaching I did in football for you know, grade school and high school football. Mm-hmm. It was the same. It's the thing is, if you execute everything properly, you know, things will work. It's and so you just got to keep executing. One of the problems you have, like you had with your client where he left and he went to town to get something to eat, is, you know, well, you're completely out of the game at that point.
You're not running the play. That's
right. And when you're in a situation where you're fishing with a good guide and you have limited hours in the water, you got to go and go and go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but then at the same time, like we talked, like, you know, the article
uh-huh.
on Muskie 360 is, you know, there are prime times and not to overthink it, but at the same time, you can see that we do rely on moon phases. We do rely mm-hmm. on watching weather. Little subtleties in weather, little subtleties in, you know, like a moon peak, whether it's a minor or a major, a moon overhead, a moon underfoot, a sunrise, a sunset, cloud cover coming in. When things like that happen, folks, on dead fishing experiences, suddenly there's movement. And, you know, it's the fish, for example, in the latest article I did for Muskie 360, is it only takes one cast. That muskie in that photo is my biggest muskie of this past season,
mm-hmm.
and that's a muskie that Chaz Martin nicknamed Balboa, and, you know, it was just a big rocky Balboa. This fish came up at the boat and, you know, just leaped. You know, did there's a photo on you know, inside the article shows mm-hmm. what this muskie did, and it was over like that. Boom. There was nothing going on. Tyler and Chaz were with me. There was nothing going on. I think Tyler stuck a pike, and then we stuck another pike. And then, you know, things are starting to happen.
Right.
You know, and pulled up into a spot, and just like that, you know, zero to hero. I catch the biggest muskie of the season, and that's the only muskie we caught that day.
You know, and I'm sitting here thinking to take it in a slight different way, because you're talking about that story, and a moment I had this week on the boat came up where I had a guy ask me. He said, why is the moon phase on the app, right? And he was jokingly, he said, are you trying to sell calendars? Which I said, well, the app is free, and no, we're not selling calendars, because he didn't sort of grasp what you know, he didn't understand why that data was so important, is what I'm getting at. He was like, why is that even in there? And end up talking to this guy at length about how to use the moon phase and all this stuff. But what I realized, that what we're doing with this moon phase, and about it only takes one cast, is we are trying to overcome our own psychology.
Yes.
And nobody, you and I have talked about things of this nature, but the psychology of musky fishing is something that we rarely speak of. And I sit here and go, you go out, you hit the water, your first three spots, you're just fired up.
Yep.
And then 2 hours into it, people are starting to lose the thread. Like you were talking about my client, yep. He had lost the thread. He had paid a guide. He went, here's money. My expectations are through the roof. Now disappointment has taken over to the point I'm going to go get a sandwich. And he missed out on hooking or reeling in a fish that is ridiculously long. And just because his brain got in his way.
Well, yeah, because anybody can cast that first hour or two. But then to keep it going for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours, and let's talk quickly about the moon phase and then back it up. Okay, the birthday beast. What I do a lot of times, folks, too, is I will look after I catch a fish, I will check the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always plan. Sometimes I do. You know, but when you're fishing really good spots, for example, when you and I were out in August last year, every spot we fished is a big fish spot.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah, every spot we're on is a big fish spot. So a lot of times what I do in that is, I might refer to it in morning, say, we're coming up on a moon peak at around 11:15 this morning.
Uh-huh.
And then, I may not bring it up again. And then all of a sudden we catch fish and go, wow, that fish hit within 2 minutes of a moon peak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll do that. But anyways, the birthday beast hit on a moon peak. It was a midday moon set.
Right.
The big fish I caught, Balboa, that big fish that's in the picture on the feature article, this week on Muskie 360, that fish was hit on a moon peak.
Yeah.
So where I'm going with this, folks, is that's why we put them in there. So how do you use that moon phase to your advantage? Here's how you do it. If you've raised a big muskie, or if you got good information about where there is a big muskie, you want to be on that spot, especially on a weak weather system. When you got one of those days where there really is no frontal activity, it's an average day. Maybe it's a post frontal bluebird. You got really weak conditions. Your only chance, probably, of catching a fish on that day is during a moon peak or a sunrise or a sunset.
Mm-hmm.
So, how big is a feeding window on a day like that? It is a minute. It's a 5 minute. That's it. It's one cast. If you know where there is a big fish and you've raised it throughout your trip, or the lodge owner told you where it's at, you want to be on that spot during those predictable times.
Right. Well, you said lodge owner, and immediately Trevor popped into my head.
Yeah.
Trevor, the guy, when we were talking to him in August, is like, we were going out. And that trip, most of our contacts were at moonset, I believe. It was a moonrise.
Yes.
Moonset. Yeah, it's moonset. And we talked to a walleye guide that's there at the same lodge. They're putting walleye in the boat at the same time. So I'm sitting here trying to, it's almost like some people don't want to believe that the moon has as much influence as it does, but it does, folks. It does.
Well, it does. And here's the logic, folks, wrapping it up really simple. If you think about it, the moon is going to rise and the moon is going to set, and the sun is going to rise and the sun is going to set every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't think those things in themselves have an influence on things, well, just watch. If you're down in Florida or down on the coast, watch the tide.
It moves an entire sea. Yeah.
It moves a sea. Now, if you watch insect hatches, if you watch, what happens right after sunset, insects hatch.
Mm-hmm.
You see things like this happen because what's going on is the ecosystem, from tidal influences to insect hatches to fish movement, is all triggered by the most basic things in the environment. And some of those most basic things are moonrise, moonset, sunrise, sunset, and then to an extent, to another extent, is weather systems moving through, which would be another factor. And then seasonally would be the change of light. So, why are muskies really fat in the fall? Because, their pituitary glands read the change of light and the changing of light, and it tells them to develop eggs and get ready for winter, Yep. And those are all environmental things that are so simple. And so, fish, just like animals, are very simple creatures. They react to their environment. End of story.
Yeah. And all we're doing is just taking that data and using it to our advantage, like you're saying, just using that moon phase. It's not magical. It's just a matter of that's a good way to refocus,
Yes. And the reason for this article is just to, this time of the year is just to have people, just always be thinking. If you've never caught a muskie and you're going out, for example, if you can go out right now, the next 2-3 months, you can go out and fish muskies in some of these southern places, by the way, and fish with my good friend that I'm talking to here on the phone.
Yeehaw.
this is another thing. There's a muskie fishery available in the winter. People need to take advantage of that. And this article is telling you, no matter when you fish, no matter how experienced you are, is always stay focused on the game and keep running the play, because you just never know. And the more muskies you catch, the more success you have, the more you will know that no matter how tough your day's been, no matter how tough your week's been, no matter how, sore you are, it can happen at the beginning of the day, it can happen at the end of the trip, it can happen at the end of the season. You just don't know, so keep going.
Run the play.
That's
awesome. It's so true, man. It's so true. What are you filling up for some user questions, Joe? What do you think?
Absolutely.
They send and guys, I got to tell you, all you listeners and users out there, we appreciate it. We try to get to as many as we can, and we're just going to keep working through them. And really appreciate the input and the user questions. So the first one up is Bob K. What strategies do you use for fishing highly pressured water? I fish in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, and our lakes are very busy with quality muskie anglers, recreational boating traffic during the summer. So what are your recommendations for fishing pressured water with obviously intelligent pressure also?
Well, this is a real easy answer, because I grew up doing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And even before my muskie days, I grew up doing this as a bass angler as a kid. And so what I do is read the anglers. I take advantage of what they do, mm-hmm. and I play off of that. And where I'm going with this, Bob, the guy who asked this question, is don't do what the Joneses do.
Yeah.
You stay away from the traffic. Fish really early, first light. If you don't like night fishing, that would be my favorite time to fish, is fish that right before and right into first light. And I know a lot of my friends who are guides on some of these big waters that get a lot of traffic that don't night fish, that's their main game, is to fish that early morning, first daybreak kind of thing. Because let's face it, most people don't want to get up and get going in the morning.
In fact.
And so, yeah, fact. It's
that's
a fact.
So
that's a fact. So if you get out and you can beat, there was a time when people thought that muskies didn't get going early in the morning. I think that's kind of funny.
They're down there.
There's an even larger group
my
of people.
Yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't have their caffeine yet. Then there's a larger group of people 20, 25 years ago that didn't know that muskies fed at night. Well, now there's a lot of guys making a living fishing at night.
Uh-huh.
And back in the early 80s, I was one of the guys that exposed the whole night fishing thing. Part of me wishes I would have never even done so. But, I made a living guiding highly pressured lakes. Picking my clients up at 8 o'clock in the evening, getting them out on the water, getting them acclimated, and then just telling them, don't get all worked up here, because we're not going to see a fish until mm-hmm. you hear the last outboard leave the lake. when this lake is quiet, we will start catching fish. And that is a metro that's one of the best advices I can give metro anglers is, boy, get into the night scene, you know, become a night stalker, get into the night bites. And it's real easy to catch fish doing that too, by the way. Simple approach, fish one or two spots, three at the most, one or two baits. Keep your boat clean, keep your approach simple, and more often than not, you know, you will score consistently doing that.
Absolutely. One thing I would say too is because we do get questions about this, and I get asked all the time about fishing behind other people. Don't think the boat in front of you is better than you. And you go into that, like on these pressured bodies of water, go in with the headset that it doesn't matter if somebody's already been through there because you haven't been through. You know, nobody's a human sane. You know?
Well, you know, that brings up a great point. If you are in a situation where you are fishing with behind people, which, you know, these guys who are in a muskie tournament, that's a big deal. You're fishing behind people all the time. Don't do what the Joneses do again.
No.
You know, if you can, you know, it's pretty obvious most of the time, you know, what's the obvious bait that most of these guys are going to be throwing?
Bucktails.
And you look at, yeah, bucktails, you can see the blade, you can hear the blades clanking, you usually see it.
Uh-huh.
It's usually you're fishing chase baits, looking for an active fish. And if you go from behind them by doing two things, downsizing and going deeper.
Yeah.
And if you add a third element and you create jerks and pauses and hang time to your lures, deeper, smaller, and create hang time, you can fish behind people consistently and stick fish. And again, I made a living doing that for years. And I'll tell you, my buddy Chaz Martin does this all the time. He goes as a guide. If you're guiding heavily pressured water, he guides on the Eagle Three Lakes chain here.
There's no pressure there.
Oh my gosh. It's literally a tournament every day.
Right.
And yet, you know, he scores consistently. How does he do it? By the three things I just said. You know, he fishes, he downsizes, fishes deeper a lot of times, and creates hang time situations. You know, what I mean by hang time? Well, for example, instead of just throwing out and cranking a lure and like a jerk bait, a minnow bait, like a shallow raider or a depth raider, as soon as you hit something, as soon as you touch a weed, you clunk bottom, as soon as you hit something, stop, jerk, pause that bait next to cover, and create a hang time situation. If you're casting near cover of any kind, don't be in a hurry to get out of cover.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but you know, downsizing and going deeper is really one of the best ways to get big fish. And you know, guys are all throwing big baits, throw a small blade. You know, that's one of the reasons the 500 Booker Tail, you know, that tinsel series has been so killer, is because it's literally taking what everybody else is doing and then just downsizing it.
You just said that, and we were talking about these crazy days, and you said the tinsel. Remember the 2 years or what, two or three? It was 3 years ago what I did with that 500?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about running the play and seeing that, and I won't tell the whole story, but with the 500 tinsel, I caught 350s in one day, and that was on five casts.
Wow.
Remember that in the summer? I was calling you. I got, hey, Joe, I got two back-to-back, and he said, keep fishing.
Yes.
You know, and I called back 5 minutes later. You know, that goes back to run the play, but also, too, it all came together in my head because that scenario, there had been two boats through that spot. I kid you not.
Yeah.
Come right through that same place on that same point, working over it, doing the typical stuff, bombing rubber and bombing tins.
Yep.
And they drove by six anglers, drove by 350-inch fish on a singular point that responded to a downsized slow presentation. I mean,
you and I in August, I think that, you know, you talk about it was downsizing that saved our trip. Our August trip with cold fronts, you know, you started it off by, you know, with these little depth raiders, you stuck that first big fish.
Mm-hmm.
And again, also hang time. You're ticking bottom, you
hang time.
Little pause, thunk, there's a fish on there. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just, I tell you, you can fish behind people, folks.
Mm-hmm.
With little crankbaits, huh, Steve?
Talk about fishing behind people. So Tyler Andrews, myself, and Chaz Martin have to fish behind you. You and I think about this because my dad, grandfather, both of them are really good muskie anglers. I grew up on a muskie boat. And you're the guy that's either in the middle or behind a great muskie angler all the time. So that's why, if I pull on a spot and there's another boat through there, I go, well, nobody on that boat's as good as the two people that are on this boat. And that's the thing is, if you're fishing behind that lead guy that's really good, you've got to be doing something different.
You know? That is outstanding advice. And that is the way to fish as the second or the third guy in the boat, is not to duplicate what he's doing. And I mean, right down to, I am always amazed when I see multiple guys throwing blades or something and just throwing different, they're throwing different colors.
Yeah.
You know,
they're going to be on purple in the back of the boat, boys.
Yeah. Think about this, folks. Just go to a different zone. You know, it fish a zone that nobody else is fishing. One other thing that works too is especially for young anglers, the guys fishing behind me, for example, folks, you're talking about, these guys, Chaz and Tyler are always fishing behind me, mm-hmm. and they can outcast me.
Yeah.
They can cast further than I can. So, Tyler is being third in the boat. He casts, I don't think anybody can outcast Chaz Martin because he really does. He is a Brett Favre. even though he's a Chicago Bear fan,
boo.
He's a Brett Favre guy all the way. And he can throw some of the longest casts I've ever seen. And so if I'm fishing a blade, for example, he'll throw it, and we're in a shallow water bite. He will throw a top raider. Or a dancer raider, and he will throw that thing literally 15 miles. Mm-hmm. And so he's reaching a section of water that I'm not. And there's a couple of these Minnesota guides that some of my friends fish with that's how those Minnesota guides come from behind their clients and stick these fish. They cast further.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Luke Ronstadt, I heard, is like the longest caster on the planet, and I would believe that. He's a big guy.
Uh-huh.
A big guy that can cast a long ways, and he catches some of these big fish
just
by fishing, casting further. Now, that doesn't mean, folks, you should always do that, because there are times when you cast too far, you just get snagged up.
Yeah.
The downsizing, running deeper is one of the philosophies I always suggest doing. And then, I'll tell you, one of the greatest things that Chaz ran into with this, fishing second or third in the boat, mm-hmm. and really scoring big, is the JB Rattler.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fishing these little lipless cranks, it just throws a presentation at them, even on follow-ups. I've had so many fish stolen from me by Chaz.
Just sneaking up on you.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure he's going to listen to this broadcast, and he's going to be giggling and smiling, because, I'll be, oh, here's one. I dig him in, and he takes off. And I can hear him back there already putting his bait away, grabbing usually my rod.
convenient.
With a JB Rattler on, he grabs it. And just goes, starts clock. I call it the clock drill. He'll just start making casts all around, fan casting. And within three or four casts, if that, he'll stick that fish on that JB Rattler.
I love it. So, all right, man. Our next question is from Josh. Josh asks, with the early onset of ice this year in the north, how do you foresee it affecting musky patterns and fishing this spring?
I don't believe it has any effect at all.
Okay.
I really don't. I don't think that has any effect at all. In fact, if anything, what Josh should be looking at is the ice out itself, and not the ice up. Mm-hmm. So basically not a factor in my world, in my opinion, that's not a factor. What is a factor is what happens this spring, and as we know, this weather is weather's different every year. And, for those of you listening that are believers in climate change and global warming or global cooling or the ice, whatever I can tell you from all the years, I've been fishing,
right,
that we have early ice outs, we have late ice outs. We have early ice ups, we have late ice. We have snowy winters, we have weak snow winters and ultra cold. We have ultra cold winters that are short, and we have snowy winters that last a long time. We've had these these peaks and these trends, these little spikes in the way the weather operates, you know, throughout my lifetime and certainly throughout the history of the planet. So am I a believer in this stuff? I'll leave that open, you know, but I will say this is that, you know, this winter, for example, we've had a very wet year.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the wettest years on record, and it's falling right into, we had a cold snap in late October, early November, so we had an early ice up. But now we're having a very snowy winter, which is also part of that rainy, you know, pattern we're in. Yet we could have, you know, we could have a warming trend in April up here and have early ice out, and it changes everything. So, yeah. You know, as soon as the ice goes off the lake, you're into a different season. Whether it's a late ice out into May, and you know, Steve, you fish Canada as well as the mm-hmm. South, you know that. You're talking to your friends in Canada sometimes, that, you know, in May they're still iced up, and the next year, you know, in April they've got ice out. So
yeah,
you never know. No,
I mean,
you don't.
The only ice I have to deal with is in my tea, and I'm happy for that.
I will say this with weather patterns, uh-huh. is that if you logically think about this, folks, is the weather's always changing.
Yeah.
You know, you when you wake up in the morning and, you know, you get the weather report, and even the way the weather is forecasted now, as good as they forecast weather, they still can't get it right.
Yeah.
You know, the weather's always changing and it's still unpredictable. And so there's never been stable weather. There's never been predictable weather. And, you know, I don't believe that, especially in the situations where we live. Well, I'm talking to you as I'm talking to you with 65, you said, in the Nashville area yesterday.
Yesterday was amazing. I was muskie fishing in a t-shirt. It's the end of December for all you northerners, just to rub that in. Just, I was in a t-shirt catching
muskies. I'm coming
muskies.
Down to fish with you soon.
I know. I know. get you a pup tent and live down in the woods down here, man. It's better than what you're doing. What do you got, about 77 inches of snow in your driveway right now?
Honestly, to be honest with you, it's not that much, but it's about waist deep.
Oh my God, no thanks. Yeah. Moving on.
Yeah. but the weather now today by you, it's in the 20s, right?
Yeah, well, we took a big jump, and it's always a roller coaster. You just never know. So
weather's weather.
You don't know. Don't overthink it. It's to Josh's question. Who knows? You could have ice until July. There's no telling. But actually, I see another question that popped up here. We've got it. Randy's wanting to know. Randy asked the question, what baits do you recommend for muskie fishing in the South? Which I will quickly tell you this. I get asked this all the time, and people will shoot me emails through my website and all this stuff. It's the same baits. It's just a whole different ethos and thought process of on location, which we'll delve into later. We don't even have time for that one on the podcast, Randy, so you don't need to worry about trying different baits. There's a few change ups though, but I will address this in an article for you here shortly. The next one up is Ethan. Well, Joe, it's one of those things is people think that it's going to be like all different baits, and it's not. Mm-hmm. You could bring your tackle box that you fish in Minocqua with down here, and we're mm-hmm. going to catch fish. It's just, it's tools. It's like, how do you use them? You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
You can't, so it's not interchangeable, but we'll cover it on an article because we keep getting asked. All right, the next
muskies
one.
Muskies are muskies.
They do different stuff, but it's all the same. All right, Ethan's question is this. I have a musky lake with both pure strain and tigers. The lake's a little over 1,000 acres. My father and I are trying to catch these fish while fishing out of kayaks. How do we start breaking apart water and finding musky spots?
You know, the whole kayak thing is like, so I'll let you, you know, the kayak part, you know, knock yourself out because I've got some friends.
Do you know about the Jody story in the kayak?
No. Oh yeah, about her catching a muskie in the kayak.
Well, yeah, and her call. So I'll tell it real quick. So my wife has a kayak. I tell her about this 50-incher the night before. A client missed it. This fish comes in hot as raging at the bait, and the guy just whiffs on the figure eight. It freaked him out. The next morning, my wife goes out on this spot before I even launch. And I have my client on the boat. My phone rings, and she is screaming. I think she's being murdered. And it's her getting drug around the leg by a 50-incher. And it's trying to tip her over in this kayak. So I say this. We ended up getting the fish, by the way. But I say this. If you're going to fish for muskies on big musky water, have stabilizers on there because it can get messy if you've not done it. But anyway, I just love that story. It's ridiculous. But
it's hilarious. You know, I got a friend of mine. She fishes out of sheep. This Midwest fisher gal, Christine Fisher. She's fishing out of muskies, out of kayaks on Lake St. Clair. And I'm thinking, you're out of your mind, lady. You're out of your mind.
30 miles offshore out there.
Yeah, you're out of your mind. I saw a video the other day of a guy fishing sharks in a kayak. It's like, hey, knock yourself out. But anyways, you know, I do want to touch quickly on there are differences between the tigers. You know, the hybrid musky pike cross, and then the regular strain muskies, and we both know that. You know, what's really interesting, and to kind of answer this question, is I would concentrate on fishing muskies and not try to go, well, you know, what's the, you know, fishing tigers and then trying to fish pure muskies and trying to separate through. I'm just concentrating on fishing muskies, and you will stumble on these tigers. But one of the unique things about tigers is, for example, a lot of times they tend to have more northern pike style traits. Mm-hmm. They have some musky traits too, but for example, tigers do not have as good a vision.
Yeah.
They don't feed in low light as well. They don't feed at night hardly at all, like a pike. They seem to be attracted to gaudy lures more often, like pike do, flashy gaudy lures. At times they behave more like pike than they do muskies. They're not always in the same spots that muskies are either. So that the regular strain muskies are, for example, up here, quite often we run into tigers up really shallow inside sloppy, thick weed cover, like bass water, where dominant muskies are more often on the, you know, on the prime structure, on the edges. And some of the biggest tigers I've caught also have come during odd times. Now, this again, I'm going to refer to one of my YouTube videos that I suggest you guys check out. It's when the wind's from the east, tigers bite like a beast. Ooh. And I have caught more big tiger muskies. The majority of my big tiger muskies, the majority of them, have come on odd weather conditions, especially east winds or dead flat calm conditions. When nothing else is moving, when I'm not moving fish, when I'm not moving regular muskies, I'm often, especially if the wind is out of the east or something, the weather's kind of odd, I'm looking for a big tiger to show up.
Is it sort of like that same process or thought process with the pike, that they're coming up in the cold fronts and the crappy conditions first?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I totally am on that. Absolutely. Absolutely. But these, you know, big tigers in particular seem to be weird, and they show up at the weird times on good musky spots too. And sometimes it's like, where was this tiger musky all the other days I fished here? Good question. But on a weird day, be looking for a tiger.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was asking, you know, how do I start breaking apart the water? You know, we've got a lot of stuff here on the app that'll help you with that as far as thought process. But one thing I would say with the kayak, I would recommend getting like an inexpensive fish finder. Hummingbird makes, what is it? The Piranha. There's a Piranha Max, I think. And not Piranha Max. It might be. It's like they sell them at Walmart. They're like $100. That's a really good fish finder that would fit perfectly on your kayak, and you could run it on a portable 12-volt. I would recommend that, though, at least to have, if you're trying to find spots, and he's trying to ascertain spots, having that information is going to be critical. You know, so a small fish finder, at least so you're not just blindly casting on those spots. You know, that's, you know, here you and I were doing a podcast and running an app about all the information it takes to be successful. You know, and so anything that you can add to your personal game to be successful, like, you know, even on your kayak, having that insight so you can get dialed in a little bit more. So next one up is Justin. Justin says, I'm from Ohio, and I am fishing a lake that is not stocked but has muskies in it. I've been fishing downstream below the dam, looking for shad in deeper water. Right? Mm-hmm. He said, my water temps are 37 to 40 degrees. I've tried jigging. I've tried live bait. I've tried casting, and I seem to be missing out on something. Mm-hmm. Do you have any endpoint to help me dial in on a Midwestern lake and river system?
So that question, that's a long question.
It is. It is. I'm paraphrasing some of it.
And yeah. Did he give me a time of the year?
Well, he's currently. This is as currently. Of now.
We're currently.
He's in the game. So it's okay. December in Ohio is going to be 37-40s on some of that stuff.
Well,
so.
I'll tell you, you know, there's two really good cold water tactics. Well, there's actually three. One of them's live bait. If you're into live bait game, which a lot of guys are, live bait, if you have access to it and you're into the live bait game, if you haven't tried the live bait game, this is, you know, the cold water period is one of the greatest times of the year and one of the key times when live bait fishing, you know, isolated small areas that you know have fish in them and just keeping live bait in front of those fish. One. Number two, a big thing, you know, today is with real cold water is this deep vertical jigging with these vertical jigging baits. And that would be highly recommended that you try that. And a third one that is the trolling game. Trolling crankbaits off of a weighted rig, a dipsy diver, a downrigger, off of lead core line. We have a detailed breakdown on Musky 360 about how deep some of these crankbaits run, specifically the depth reader. Yeah. And slow cold water trolling is deadly. Deadly this time of the year, deadly on big fish. And, you know, water temperature below 40 degrees, plus or minus below 40 degrees, and running your outboard at about, you know, 1 to 1.5 miles per hour. This is, by the way, where before we could troll in northern Wisconsin, is where this row trolling was really deadly. It was really deadly. So you put two depth readers out. You know, one with 100 feet of line out, one with 150 feet of line out, you know, just to paraphrase here and make things simple. And then you're just rowing and just making that lure just barely wobble, you know, so you're moving slowly and steadily over these spots and then just coming at them from various angles and spending a lot of time. So my friend Tom Gelb, you know, that Tom Gelb, before he did this row trolling, you know, I was row trolling as a guide before he was, and then I learned it from, you know, one of the guy who really developed this row trolling into this, you know, the specialized musky fishing technique that it is today, and that was Bob Ellis. I wrote an article on it way back in the old Fishing Facts days, and that was when Bob scored on row trolling all the time, but he rowed faster in the summer. And then in the cold water period, you would roll slowly, just watch the rod tip get a good wobble on the crankbait, just enough to make the crankbait wobble, and then get, you know, maintain depth and just take these spots and break them and just take them from various angles, you know, east, west, north, and south, and then until you scored on a fish and then try different line distances on your rod tip, especially using a line counter reel until you score. So those three techniques, live bait, vertical jigging, and then slow cold water trolling with crankbait, all will catch fish in that cold water period.
And one thing, Justin, I've fished a bunch of Ohio, grew up there on the tip of Ohio and West Virginia. And once I got down here, I ran into a lot of that same problem with the deep fish. We don't have the same as cold water temperatures, but we drop down, you know, in the low 50s and stuff. And I just put that article up talking about trolling tactics with a dipsy diver, which is not something you don't hear dipsy diver in musky fishing very often. You know, it's not something. But the reason I had that article is I ran into the same thing where I have deep shad. So if we're looking at that shad forage base of 4-inch long shad or maybe a smidge bigger, how do I get a small bait deep? And so your options become like a baby depth raider, but I've been just doing really good with JB Rattlers on on that Dipsy diver to get it really deep. So here you've got this small presentation going slow, but it's deep, because small and slow are a hard combo to achieve. And
yes.
I've made that work. The other thing is this, there's not to misspeak. I know I have some suspending baby depth raters that you've come up with, but there's not like a countdown, right? So they haven't made a countdown baby depth rater. What you can do is actually start weighting those. Mm-hmm. And it's a little mod I do, and just put some weight, start with, you know, quarter ounce, whatever is like a bell sinker on the front of the baby depth rater, and get it down as a countdown depth rater. And yep. So if you need to cast these shad schools, whereas a full-size depth rater might be a little bit over the top for these fish that are not, like, super fired up. Obviously, it's cold water, and they're feeding on those smaller fish. Around those bait schools, a small depth rater with some weight, cast that, count it down, take it into the shallows. You can sort of get an idea of what it's going to run like and how quickly it's sinking, so you can go, okay, if this thing's falling about a foot a second or whatever it is, if I need to hit 18, 20 feet, count it down 18 seconds, let all that line out, and you're going to work it right through that school. Because I think what he's running into more so than anything is probably a matter of keeping those baits down long enough in the quote-unquote strike zone.
Yep.
You know, with those shad schools. So cool stuff, man, cool stuff. And I think that's about it as far as time. We're running out of time here. We're running a little bit long. But, Joe, as always, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's your podcast. You can be on it anytime you want, obviously.
So. Well, I enjoyed it very much, Steve. You do a great job on this thing. And again, I think as we summarize this whole thing, you know, getting back to our, you know, the original topic is that even as it goes to answering these questions is it only takes one cast to make a season, only takes one cast to make a day, and only takes one cast, mm-hmm. you know, to change your lifetime. And so, you know, it's just stay with it and keep learning, keep after it, keep running a good play, you know, keep using the baits that you have confidence in. And if you do that, you know, and you fish good water, you will eventually score, and you will be posing with a big fish.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.